Will wants me to say avocado, so I'm saying avocado, by the way.
What?
Oh.
That's the safety word, isn't
Oh,
hello and welcome to the Pocket Gamer iPhone and iPad Gaming Podcast, episode 174. My name is Peter Willington. I'm replacing Will Wilson on the podcast until next week, I think. I'm joined by the always delightful John Jordan.
Hello.
The rather incredible James Gilmore.
Hello there.
And Keith Andrew.
I always have thought of everyone's jokes. Whoever's presenting this podcast.
Wait, isn't it?
Just falls on me.
Yeah.
I'm just me, you know. I'm just me. I'm like Madonna or, you know, Lady Gaga or something. I don't need your praise.
I'm just channeling Will. That's it. I just miss him so much.
Sure, he's probably sent you a script with all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
With some Keith Disdain on it. Written.
Yeah. It's like brackets, berate Keith. good. All right. Let's go on with the news. So I think the top story this week is probably that Casey's Contraptions HD has been taken off the App Store as Rovio has confirmed that it has acquired the IP. Vil Hijer? Is that Hijer? That doesn't sound right. Is that right? Hijer sounds like a
Finnish.
Swedish high chair. It's
Finnish.
Okay. That chap has said that it is a perfect fit in our arsenal with its approachable, fun, and highly addictive take on the physics puzzler genre. Mr. John Jordan, is this a good move by Rovio? Why buy a game or an IP that was critically well received but didn't do very well commercially?
Well, presumably that's the idea. That it reviewed, I think it's one of the top reviewed games. It's one of the top reviewed iPad games, anyway. I think it only came out on iPad, didn't it? So, I mean, I guess there's always been these rumours with Rovio about they're going to have like a publishing arm or like a distribution arm or something, because obviously they just have access to so many kind of people now. I mean, it's kind of, because at the same time, it's kind of a bit weird that actually their kind of big announcement this week was kind of like they did 1 billion downloads of Angry Birds, and then kind of this other thing came out as like a sneak peek, and then it kind of people worked out kind of what they were doing, partly because the original developers, Casey Contraptions, kind of let the cat out of the bag. There's a bit of an odd way to do it, but I think it kind of, from a business point of view, it makes sense. I'm just surprised they kind of hadn't done it sooner, really, because I mean, just any not necessarily for Casey's Contraptions, but that came out like autumn, I think, last year. But you just kind of think they could have, there could have quite a lot of games they could have published or say distributed to their kind of fan base, and they probably would have quite liked it. So I think it makes sense, just maybe the timing a bit odd, and maybe PR positioning a bit could have been better, maybe.
A little bit wonky.
I think the way they kind of brought it out is like this sneak new character, because it's actually not, the character isn't Casey from Casey's Contraptions, the character is a different character. I mean, he looks the same, but it's not the same character, so you know, I kind of think they're going to do something a little bit different with it. I don't think they're just going to re-release the same game. I think there's something different going on there, because that would be odd just to re-release the same game. But I think if you say you buy the IP, then that's a bit more than just we're re-releasing the game. It's like, oh, we think it's a good game and we like this kind of, because he's like a child character. He's like, I don't know, he's like a 10-year-old kind of boy kind of thing. So I think they see it would appeal to a slightly younger audience. Well, I mean, Angry Birds obviously appeals to older people as well, but I think they kind of see it as more than just we're releasing one game. I think everything now Rovio does is all about franchise, and obviously all about merchandising, and all about can we make plushies of this character and stuff.
It's I think it's interesting, if only because they need never, I seem to remember being said on this podcast like 6 or 7 months ago, that they need never actually, if they never wanted to, they wouldn't ever have to make another new IP again, if you know, or buy an IP. They wouldn't have to do anything again, essentially. They could move their business in other ways other than just games. So I think it's quite interesting they've done it, and it seems quite calculated to me that they've waited this time. I was looking back on the articles today,
really?
And they were talking about doing it back in February and saying, you know, we were interested in buying another IP. I think they've probably sniffed about several and have decided that this is the one to do. And I was saying yesterday that if this is the way they're going, then they have to be very careful that their name isn't diluted, the appeal of Rovio isn't diluted if they take on too many. I mean, if this proves, if the revision or re-release or new game, whatever, in this series isn't as good or doesn't catch on, then that flashes the warning signs, because this kind of setup will only work in terms of people being drawn to a game because it's got Rovio's name on it, if the games that have Rovio's name on it are all as good as Angry Birds. So it's kind of, I suspect they've been very, very, it's a risk. It is a risk, I think. It is a risk. And they've obviously, I suspect, been very calculated in how they've worked out what is the IP to do this with. It should be interesting.
Do you think that, like, whether this actually takes off or not, whether it, because I say it was reviewed critically well acclaimed, but didn't sell necessarily brilliantly, whether this turns out to be a massive Rovio success, they spin it into something fantastic, and by, you know, allying it with the Angry Birds, you know, franchise, the whole Rovio thing, it takes off in a massive way. Or even if it doesn't really take off and it's forgotten about within a couple of months of release, do you think that it really will do that much damage? Could it tarnish the awesome reputation that the Angry Birds has generated?
I don't think it will have any appeal on Angry Birds, but Rovio have been quite clever in that ever since they started publishing themselves outside iPhone, that their name is attached to, unlike other publishers where it's the game that's big. Obviously, it's the game that's huge, but I think a lot of people are aware, in this kind of Nintendo Mario way, that Angry Birds is Rovio. And so that the idea is then that you can take that strength of your name and put it to others and say, you like this, you'll also like this, because look, it's got our name on it. So if you do that, then you've got to be very careful that the game you do is as good. I don't think it have any impact. Angry Birds is long, you know, it's sailed. It's I don't think anything much would detract from its name unless they released an awful Angry Birds game. But I think just in terms of, if this is their business model, if this is where they're going, where they plan to do this with other IP, whether their own or other people's, then this has to be good, because otherwise then that will, it will make people less inclined to go to them with their IP if they want them to do something with it or sell it or publish it. And it will also, it would lessen the Rovio name, I think. It could work. You could have Rovio, it could be like, you know, a name for like elite kind of, you know, mobile experiences, essentially. If they keep it select and small and make sure they pick the right games, it could be massive.
Well, on the subject of elite gaming experiences on mobile, Gameloft obviously have just released Nova 3, but I think we'll cover that in new releases. They've also had some first bits of artwork sneaked out for their latest free-to-play gangster spin-off, Gang Domination. It's set in Japan, or at least it looks like it probably is, according to the art. There's we've got the art up on the site. Keith, you absolutely loved their last outing. Is the move to Japan enough for you?
I wish they'd move to Japan. any word, any game off game now with the word gang in its name is going to make me very fearful. Money, that does look, looking at the picture now, that does look rather... Well, it looks rather awful, and it looks rather different. So maybe it might be completely different.
Well, it's built from the ground up, I believe.
That's a good sign. That's a good sign. Gang Domination is a pretty awful name. But...
I don't think it's a working title at the moment, it seems to be.
Yeah, I hope so.
I mean, just in terms of the context of that information, it's kind of weird, because it's not come from Gameloft, so it's come from a company called Gree, who is a big Japanese kind of platform company. They do make games as well, but they're kind of rolling out this kind of platform a bit kind of, I mean, they bought the OpenFaint company, so it's a bit like kind of they're rolling out a kind of version of OpenFaint globally at the moment. So they're looking to kind of get a lot of kind of publishers involved in that. So the kind of, I don't think Gameloft have formally said anything about it at all, and Gree just put out, I mean, they put out their financial figures, and as part of that they had some documentation about new games that are coming on their platform, and this was just one they highlighted. So so we don't really have, we're a little bit kind of guessing about exactly what this is going to be like, other than the fact it's coming out in Japanese and English language. But the fact that Gree have highlighted it suggests, I think, it's probably going to be quite a high profile game, because the other game they highlighted was Assassin's Creed, the free-to-play mobile version of Assassin's Creed. So, you know, if you're not putting up against Assassin's Creed, but if those are the two big games, they're kind of like almost like showing off to their investors. I think Gameloft will have hopefully taken their learnings or their lack of learnings, I guess, at the moment on free-to-play. But.
It looked like that artwork on anyone listening to the podcast is looking at this story now. The artwork looks like all the characters like they've been drawn by different people. It's plopped on together. The guy at the background is looking sneery. His head's poking above the other. It just looks like he's from a different picture. They've dropped him in or something.
Well, Keith, I mean, I think that's partly because this is not how Gameloft necessarily would have wanted it to be announced. So, you know, I don't know.
Wonder how pleased they are by that, though.
I mean, yeah. I mean, that's kind of why it's interesting to look at these companies' financial reports, because there's all this information. I mean, I remember one time, going a bit off subject, there was a whole thing about DNA who bought NG Moco. And they did a whole thing about how NG Moco weren't going to make any new games this year because they were working on this platform. And I put a story up about it, and NG Moco PR went ballistic in the US PR. Just like, no, it's wrong. And I was like, well, it says it here on the company that owns you's financials. and so they had to phone up to get the Japanese to take down that kind of... to change that bit of their financial reporting. It's quite interesting. Anyway, that's by the by.
Let's move on to another story. There's a new iOS game from the Tiny Wings developer Andreas Illiger. Oh my word, why is it this week that all of the surnames are really tough? I'm going to go with Illiger.
You just called him, Andreas, like you're friends.
Oh yeah, me and Andreas.
The big A.
He, my mate, yeah, he made Tiny Wings. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's pretty big. So it's almost ready, this new iOS game, and apparently it's a few weeks from completion. In our story, he says that he doesn't think that success has gone to his head, but it has made his day-to-day life really hard negotiating deals for lucrative licensing and movie optioning. He hasn't actually said anything about the game, though. Is this exciting news to us? Like, I mean, personally, I haven't played Tiny Wings, but I do know that it's...
Must be on your list, then.
It is, Keith. Spoilers.
I didn't fall in love with it like everyone else did, I have to say. I played it for a bit, but I wasn't...
But it's kind of... But this is exciting, isn't it?
Well, it is. I mean, this is the kind of... The problem I think he's kind of had is he's a fairly young, I mean, he was a student, wasn't he? A university student, like in his early 20s or something. And again, it's kind of a bit like the Angry Birds thing where not to say the game was a straight out copy, but there had been a few games that had used that mechanic, not quite presented in the same way. So he kind of lucked out to that degree that I don't think he's like a Miyamoto of game design. I think he's, obviously a fairly competent developer who kind of probably knows a nice game when he sees it, but because he's never done any PR really, and he's never had any communication, it's kind of hard to know. I don't have no idea. I've not seen a photo of him. I don't know what his favourite games are. I don't know if another game that he made would excite me. I mean, I was saying with Keith. I mean, I reviewed Tiny Wings and gave it 7 because I thought it's really nice at what it does, but I don't. It wasn't anything particularly. I thought amazing in terms of. Having that longevity, and it's kind of think it would be nice, I'd almost want someone to leak a bit of artwork because maybe you get a bit more excited, when he says he's going to do a new game and then doesn't give you any information about it. It's kind of like, well,
it seems very green, doesn't it? It's very much sort of, I'm going to make a game, but I mean, I know I'm kind of not exactly a proven developer. I'm quite sort of raw, but I am going to make something new. So stay tuned. And it kind of seems a little bit like, even with those quotes of, I'm finding it really tough to, talk to these people and that sort of thing. It does seem like he's a person who's not really used to this kind of how to use the media and how to,
I know completely. Yeah.
So is he negotiating a movie deal for this a new game or for Tiny Wings?
For Tiny Wings, apparently.
Really, movie.
The Tiny Wings movie.
About Tiny Wings.
From flying from left to right for 2.5 hours.
So you think sometimes it must get go to their heads a little bit, because you think that it's one game that does not warrant a movie in any shape or form.
But it was interesting, I think, because you mentioned it yesterday, Keith, that Ank Rovio getting kind of Casey's Contraptions is one thing, but kind of why didn't they kind of get Tiny Wings? So that, I mean, almost, in the sense that was a big hit, so in a sense he didn't really need it, but you kind of thought that almost fitted. I mean, it's a bird thing for one, you can almost think that would fit. Maybe it's too close to it, really. I don't know.
I think I can't remember who that was. Someone in the office, wasn't it?
I think
to be honest, Tiny Wings has flown its
he's going for a metaphor.
Do it.
I can't finish it. Flown its It's flown its way. It's
what? You're a poet. Natural.
Tiny Wings has flown its way.
He's flown away now. He was in the spotlight for a bit. I don't think it's not a game with, as you say, I'm not sure it's got longevity really beyond. If he did a Tiny Wings 2, I don't know what you'd do with that, because it's kind of a set format,
right to left instead of left to right. You mix up the formula, you know.
It's certainly not a game I ever thought, God, I wish there was a movie to build some backstory for this. You know, it's like, no thanks. Even Angry Birds is pushing it, to be honest, anime.
Would, like, practically writes itself. From Tiny Wings to X. Something to do with big something. Like, from Tiny Wings to Big Memories. Or, like, big things come from tiny wings.
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
Sounds like toilet paper or tampons or something. That's kind of...
What?
Sounds like a nap advert.
I'm gonna move on to something equally bloody. Super Meat Boy Dev attacks freemium games, and so this is Edward McMillan. I can pronounce that one. That's fine. Of Team Meat, he says that freemium games view their audience as dumb cattle, offering little beyond demanding money from the player through paid incentives to be have a better skill set, I suppose. He also said a naughty on his blog. He said that the mobile version of Super Meat Boy will be a feature-length, reflex-driven platformer with solid controls that doesn't manipulate you with Business Bull redacted in order to cash in. is this guy spot on? Like, is freemium, is this everything that's wrong with the mobile industry, that, you know, freemium's just kind of...
got a name you can pronounce anyway. That's
it's lucky. I mean, so does he not get the iOS format, or is he absolutely spot on about freemium?
Well, he's obviously not stop. I mean, he's obviously not spot on at all. It's ridiculous. I mean, if you just look, I mean, it happened last week, so I don't know if it was covered in the podcast, but what, you know, Gree spent $210 million buying a company called Funzio, who've been going on mobile for about 2 years and have three games free to play on mobile. And it's just been revealed we're made $5 million in revenue in April. So, you know, just the amount of money involved in freemium is certain people might not like it. And I'm sure we've kind of also seen today, this week in Japan, there's been some kind of government issues about kind of like limiting how much kids can play and certain kind of mechanics of using virtual goods. So I think there's definitely some issues within how that kind of mechanic is being used, but clearly, as we've seen from Zynga on Facebook and all the Facebook games and all the free to play games on mobile, is that while hardcore gamers and these guys are obviously hardcore indie gamers completely think the model is awful and blasphemy to the Nintendo style of making games, a lot of people who wouldn't call themselves gamers are just like, oh, I play this, and oh, I want to, how do I get this big gun? Oh, I can play it for 5 hours, or I can buy it now. I wouldn't want to kind of stand up for everything Zynga does, you know, it's completely the case. If you're running a company that's turning over, you know, $1 billion a year, those customers are satisfied. If they're not, they, you know, if somehow Zynga was ripping people off, was a pyramid scheme, the 1 year it's, you know, its revenue would be $1 billion, and the next year its revenue would be zero, because all these people have been ripped off. I mean, it's clearly not the case. I mean, I think there's good ways of doing it. I mean, if you look at, you know, if you look for best practice, you look at, like, you know, Nimblebit and how they've done Tiny Tower, or you know, Imanji, how they've done Temple Run. You know, both those games have made probably $10 million on in-app purchases. So there's ways of doing it, but it's like saying, you know, it's the whole, I mean, tedious, you know, guns don't kill people, people kill people.
Do you not think when it's someone like this says something, I mean, you don't often hear now of the big boys, you know, they don't tend to slug off freemium anymore. Do you not think when it's someone, you know, an indie developer, they take it almost as a slight that something they've created could be given away essentially?
I think you're completely right. So I had a long talk last week. I was at the BlackBerry show. We won't go into that, but I had a long talk with Michael Shard, who does the Galaxy on Fire game, the German developer Fish Labs, and just their whole thing is, you know, our game is $10. You know, it's a massive 3D space, you know, kind of shooting combat kind of game, very high end. You know, $10 is what it's worth. If you want to buy it, then you're going to pay $10, you know? He said we could sell more if we did it at $5, but the point for us is it's quality, you know? And I think those guys, you know, talk to him about freemium, or certainly Android, he laughs, he thinks it's awful, he thinks, you know. And there is that kind of, you know, we spent a year making this game, or he says his next game's going to take him 2 years to make, you know? It's like, we're going to spend that time doing it. We, you know, that's part of our kind of DNA, that we almost demand that you pay it to get that experience.
It's weird though, isn't it? Because at the end of the day, whether you're paying up front, and this is something I don't really get. I mean, like I say, I suspect he sounds like he's being a bit precious there, that he feels that, you know, you create something, you should, you know, people should pay up front. I always, at the end of the day, everyone, whether you, the method of how you charge, to me, I don't see that as like a moral issue, as some people say. No. At the end of the day, whether you're charging up front or you're charging later on, you want people to part with cash to play your game. So it's not like when you make people pay up front that you're doing like work for charity or something. It's like the way they pitch it is that, like the way he's literally pitched it here, it's like it's some evil, horrible thing that you're putting a carrot on a stick in front of their head, you know. But if you, the only alternative is that you make them pay before they've had a chance, you know, to have a go. So I don't see why the end result is that what I think annoys them is that if you do it well, you can make a hell of a lot more money that way. But that's not a bad thing. Because as I say, if people weren't enjoying it, if people didn't do it, then they would soon stop doing it. And next year, all the companies that are making all these massive revenues of working this way would make zilch, because everyone would say, well, actually, this is awful.
I mean, I have to say, just for us here, I mean, I don't really play those in a... those kind of games, although I kind of dabble in them, and I think I've probably only bought in-app purchases in maybe 3 or 4 games, and kind of one of those was because I really liked Triple Town and I wanted to give the guys some money. It wasn't because I wanted to use the in-app purchases. I mean, I know Keith, you've only done it. I remember the first time you bought in-app purchases, yeah. You were really surprised, but I think.
Yeah. It has to be.
We're the wrong audience, really. We're not.
It has to be. I think it's never an issue of money for me. Not that I'm rolling in it. It's not like I think, oh, I don't want to spend. Although, you know, I wouldn't spend £20 or something in that purchase. It's never a question of money. It's always a question of whether I think that the item or whatever I'm paying for is going to help or in a way hinder. Because I'm not. I don't want things made easier for me. If that's the way you're intended to play, if it's meant to be that difficult, then it's meant to be that difficult. But if the in-app purchase is there that actually kind of makes play more colourful or just makes it more fun or something like that, then I were happy. It never bothered me. All these people seem to take a very kind of a stance that is like...
It's like a religious review. Yeah, it's a religious thing about it. You know?
It's weird. It's really weird. I find that very odd, especially with people who are working on a medium, which literally what we're talking about now... will be something else in a few months that, you know, you can't afford to be that grounded, I don't think.
And of course, the other thing is, it's a kind of cultural Western thing as well, but, you know, obviously, you know, we have a much higher standard of living compared to people in the East. And obviously, you know, free to play, like Nexon, the massive Korean company, I mean, all its PC games are free to play. And actually, even in Germany, you know, the whole rise of browser games on BigPoint and games what they call GameForge, you know, they're all free to play browser games, you know. It's just a different, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's a good headline, but I kind of think it's just, I think people say it to kind of get a reaction, and I think equally they're not lying to get a reaction, but I think often it's people who, you know, look at the worst kind of these kind of games, don't really want to play them. And their business model means that, you know, they can. I mean, like the you know, the Super Meat Boys. I mean, how much money have they made off $3 for their game? I mean, they've made a couple of million on the thing. So, you know, they're sitting in a position where, you know, they don't need to go down that route. If you're assuming. James, have you paid? Have you bought any app purchase stuff?
No, I've played free to play games, but I haven't. I have to admit, I get turned off by the in-app purchasing. I'm actually not. Really a fan of it. It equates to me for like something like, you know, if you're watching a movie or something, and then every 15 minutes something would pop up and say, you know, do you want to watch the next 20? Well, insert a coin. And that sort of thing, like, A, it takes me out of whatever I'm doing. It's kind of removes you from the game when stuff's going, hey, why don't you buy this? And why don't you buy this? And I find like that kind of advertising obnoxious anyway, just in everyday life. So when things are popping up midway through the games demanding more money off of me for stuff, if I want to progress any further, or if I want to progress at a reasonable speed, it takes me out of the game. It annoys me at a kind of at a core level, I suppose. I mean, I don't I wouldn't say it's like evil or anything, because they're obviously they're not wrestling the money out of your hand. It's your choice whether you want to make those payments. And in some way, it's good that these people can at least play some this game, these games for free initially. They can, you know, it's like an extended demo, and they can have a taste and see if they want to play it or not. So in that sense, it gives everybody access to something that not everyone would necessarily be able to have access to. But like personally, I would much rather just pay the upfront money and then get on with my game, rather than do a free bit, pay a bit more, do a free bit, pay a bit more.
I think that was probably the case when they started. I'm not aware of all too many that pop up like that this day and age, to be honest. It's certainly not something that I noticed. I get the old one where it'll say at the end of a level or something, but it tends to more now, in my opinion, often be it's less locking off parts of the game and more letting you get to parts that aren't locked off more quickly if you buy this, that and the other. And often now that's just in a shop somewhere in a menu that isn't actually in your face all the time. But I mean, like looking at your kind of analysis there, I would say it's not necessarily play for 20 minutes and then play for more. I would have thought making that kind of, it was more like when you DVD extras or something. You could, like, you know, you watch the movie and do you want to pay 20p more to listen to the commentary, or do you want to pay 20p more to see some behind the scenes documentary we filmed? That I think it's more akin to that these days than actually literally saying you can watch 20 minutes and then we're going to charge you to watch the next, and then we're going to charge you to watch the next. And I think that's probably how it started, but I don't play masses of them, but I'm less aware of that these days.
Well, the one I'm going to, actually one of the games I was playing for this, which is Deer Hunter Reloaded, which I'll come on to sort of a little bit later, that stings you quite hard pretty early on.
I think that's
a massive turnoff.
I would say, just to kind of finish up, it's absolutely how it's done, isn't it? Like it's about whether or not it's gauche or not,
and how good the game is as well.
Yeah.
Because if it's something that is amazing, if you're playing that, I mean, I don't know what you'll say what you think about Deer Hunter later, but if it was an amazing game, you're thinking, Christ, I want to keep playing this, I don't want to stop. And it came along and it said, you know, pay X amount to carry on. You're probably going to be more willing to do that than if it's just a game you're kind of working your way through. You're not really sure about it or whatever. And it comes up and says this. You're going to think, well, I'm not really, you know, I'd rather not actually.
If it was a one-off thing, if it was like you played for a certain amount and then they said, do you want it or don't you want it? And I'd say yes or no. And that was the end of it. But so often it's this kind of constant top-up thing that you have, that you would have to do. And it irritates me.
That was, I mean, I can't remember now, but the one of Game Loss, when they tried to take their football series that way, that's kind of how that worked, and it was really badly done, and you had to buy leagues to play on and so forth, and it was just really clunky, and you thought, this isn't how it should work. I think those who are better at this, who are making the more money, actually, whatever we might think of the companies, know how to do this a lot more sophisticated now.
Cool.
It's a learning process, isn't it,
guys? Should we go to the new releases roundabout?
Mm.
Hello listeners, please don't mind me breaking the fourth wall just for a moment. We will return you to your currently scheduled podcast. Will didn't send me the audio file for the bit introducing this next section, so I've done an a cappella version instead. So, enjoy. This week in new releases, Jake escapes season over and falls head over heels. That was good, right?
You need to shout it more,
really. All right, so we're on the roundabout, and there's an old bus coming along, and it's head over heels from Elite Systems.
Isn't that a penny farthing bicycle?
Yeah, that's right. It's four penny farthing bicycles made into a bus.
Very good.
Yep, thanks. Have you guys played Head Over Heels? No?
You're talking about video games again.
Long time. I think I may have played it on a Scion, on a Scion PDA, actually.
Really? On a what?
Yeah.
It's a ZX Spectrum originally released isometric adventure. It's much beloved by the
few people who played it.
By the few people. Oh, no, I mean, it's very much a... you know, I mean, when you do speak to that weird in the corner in a pub drinking real ale and talking about ZX Spectrum games, you know, they do mention that Head Over Heels is rather good.
But that's a certain group of, like, there's like a 7-year demographic of people now in their 30s and 40s in bits of the UK. I mean, it's a fairly niche, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I did get hold of a Spectrum. Like I said, my older brother had one, so I sort of inherited it. Yankee tape machine and all. But I didn't actually play this one. I'm quite disappointed. I thought I'd got covered most of them, the Manic Miners and, Daily Thompson Super Test and whatnot. But no, I haven't actually seen this one.
Well,
did anyone?
You have failed the group. Very surreal aesthetic, and it's. I mean, it was one of the first sort of 3D games. This version comes with support for holding your phone in different ways, portrait and landscape, and customizable controls and arcade support, which I think is probably actually a very good thing for this game because. I think it could get a little bit fiddly if you're dealing with the touchscreen, but...
Do you want to explain the gameplay? What is it called, Head Over Heels?
It's called Head Over... I haven't played it, so I'm going to laugh.
You just did this big thing about how great it was.
Yeah, I said for some people. Okay. Some people like it. I'm not one of those camera members that enjoys Head Over Heels. Like... Okay. Do you know what it is, or are we just going to move on to
read it? It's about two dogs head over heels,
all right.
Heels, who bound around isometric environments and scoff down donuts.
All right.
He looks like Mr. Chips from Catchphrase.
He does. He actually does. Yeah.
I mean, it's like a puzzle game, isn't it? Where you kind of move these two, you have these two characters that you control, and you move them through different kind of environments.
It's like the first Batman game.
Like a buddy game, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Moving on. To something that's a little bit of a more known quantity. Nova 3 is from Gameloft. We gave it a very good score. I can't remember who reviewed it, but they seem to really like it.
What did we give it?
We've given it an...
Eight.
The reviewer compared it a fair amount to Halo and Crysis 2. Yeah.
Oddly enough, yeah.
Yeah, and sort of suggested that the controls were a little bit dodgy in that it kind of filled the screen with button controls and kind of obscured the action. But it's a first-person shooter with a 5-hour campaign, which will star protagonist Cal Warden. Is that a returning character, Cal
Warden? Yes, yeah. Well-known. He's famous.
He's such a hero.
Great name, isn't it? Great name.
Cal Warden.
Is that meant to mean something? I don't know.
Why do they choose these? Or you kind of think, Max Payne is like, but it's just like, if it's that you got a name of a character who people don't even know how to pronounce, I mean, how is that, who thinks these things up?
What's wrong with Jeff?
Exactly.
Susan, that's what my lead would be called.
Jeff, get over here. The aliens are attacking. Like, brilliant. Like, not as dramatic, but it also comes with 12-player deathmatch online.
Which is supposed to be pretty good, actually.
Yeah, which is going to be very good. And you can also control mechs, buddies. No, that's not head over heels. Buggies and mines. And there's
tanks
an upgrade system.
I think there's tanks.
Maybe.
I think they've pretty much thrown everything in there.
Yeah. And it looks... Do you know what? It looks really good.
Yeah, it does.
It looks beautiful, actually.
I mean, that's kind of what... You know, it's what... Clearly, you know, Gameloft are technically very good. They can cover... You know, they're really good at porting. They're really good at engines. You know, they're good at making things look nice. Not so good at game design or coming up with character names or, you know... That kind of stuff. You know,
or having an original thought. I went there. That's right.
You are a card.
I know.
What are you going to say?
Keep it clean.
Come on.
Very much a shock.
But to be fair, not that this is anything to do with iOS, but I reviewed a mobile game, which was they did the license for Wrath of the Titans on mobile, the Java little game, and it's Gameloft, and you have most of us have these preconceptions, and they're fair about their somewhat lack of inspiration in terms of coming up with anything new, and the first screens, we said it last week, but yes, the guy looks like from Crysis, and that heads up looks like Halo, and it is just clearly Halo and Crysis. You know, there's no doubt in anyone's minds. But I'm playing the little mobile game. It's all and it's ripping off God of War this time. Wrath of the Titans is the God of War ripoff. I sort of get an hour in or so, and you go, yeah, it is actually quite good, isn't it? I mean, as much as I, as much much I'd love to say it's awful and they're shameless and, you know, ripping off games and it's a complete hack job. It's not a hack job, is it? They are good at they do have good engine, you know, controls and everything.
I think I said on here a while ago that actually their Java stuff, it was usually the best Java stuff I ever played, to be honest.
Yeah, no,
it was surprisingly good. I was like, oh, as much as I'd love to lay into them for Megane Ridge, I was like, no, I mean, it's ripping off God and War. You have to make that very clear that this is clearly just stealing ideas off everyone else. But you can't say it's badly executed because it's not.
Mm. And moving on to the third game, I think we've got a few more, but Jake Escapes takes a large dollop of inspiration from Taito Arcada, Crazy Climber. And it's basically you breaking into Area 51, escaping the feds. Crazy
making
climber.
Funny noises.
Yeah, just great. Looks great. Well,
that's one of them annoying
Area 51 is it a massive tall building?
Yeah, this is what is this? This is
I'm confused. That doesn't look like Area 51.
Oh, wait, now he's in Paris.
Is Area 51 in Paris? They kept that in.
If you're gonna hide it, hide it in Paris.
Is he being attacked by aliens? I'm not sure. He's climbing up buildings. It's just a map with London and Paris on it, and then he's just climbing up endless buildings, it would look.
Keith, can you explain what the gameplay is for me, please? Because I can't turn YouTube videos on because my computer will explode.
It's annoying. It's one of them annoying trailers with loads of cartoony bits at the beginning, and then it just cuts to shots of him leaping up from window to window in rudimentary Assassin's Creed style, up tall buildings with little alien UFOs shooting at him as he does, and then there appears to be an old man in a Mac called Bob.
Mm-hmm.
Then comes along in the last bit of the trailer and starts jumping on top of him and pulling him down.
Okay, who do we think Bob is?
Bob. He looks like a detective.
Okay, detective.
He's grabbing him and throwing him to the ground and then jumping and then kind of leaping on him. It's very confusing.
That sounds marvelous. There were two more.
You were thinking of buying it or not buying it, really? Well,
were two more, weren't there, John?
Just a couple quick ones. So there's it's a game that's been out in various versions before, Red Bull X Fighters 2012, which is a freestyle motocross game. I think there's been certainly been one in that series before. It's kind of like, you know, Red Bull being kind of sponsoring kind of extreme sports and stuff. So I don't know, motocross games, I think you need to be quite into motocross, really. It doesn't seem to have the appeal of kind of skateboarding or, you know, but it looks very good. I mean, I think technically, obviously, the Red Bull know how to market stuff, and they normally spend a reasonable amount of money on getting developers to make their games. And it has all the, it's an official license in the sense that Red Bull own the license. So there's like the official tracks and I guess the official X Fighters, whoever they may be. I'm sure a lot of them are German. And there also is this is a game that actually I kind of saw a while ago. Again, it's a kind of maybe going back to our free to play thing. So in Russia they're not very keen on buying games. They're quite keen on pirating games. So obviously a lot of games in Russia, certainly the PC stuff, is all free to play, much like it is in Asia. So there's a company there called called MailRU, which is like a bit of like a Russian Google, and they're quite big into online PC games. And now they're branching out into mobile games. So they've kind of a bit actually like Nexon have done. They've basically taken the brand of one of their big online games, which is called Juggernaut. It's kind of a typical kind of fantasy kind of RPG type thing. And they've made like a kind of an I guess they call it an experiment. So they made an iOS version of that. It's not online multiplayer or anything, but it's kind of uses the backstory, the kind of the, you know, the environment and stuff. And it's kind of interesting. It's like a free to play RPG, so there's kind of a grinding kind of stuff involved. And then the action's kind of turn based in a kind of like arena setting. So there's a bit of kind of like tapping around, and I mean not really rhythm, but you're kind of you know, pressing buttons to dodge and doing different attacks, and it's a bit like that kind of Final Fantasy esque kind of combat stuff. Graphically, it looks pretty good. and it's free, so it's kind of worth checking out if you kind of like that kind of stuff. And it's called Juggernaut Revenge of Sorvering. I think Sorvering is the kind of world, the fantasy world. And there was one other one.
Lost Winds 2.
Yes. So I haven't actually played the Wii version, and so I assume this is just an iOS version of the Wii game. But yeah, Lost Winds was kind of, I guess, was it one of the few games to kind of excite people about WiiWare from Frontier Developments in Cambridge, I think, in the UK.
Yeah.
So Dave Brabham of Elite fame. So yeah, very, very kind of cute, almost like Japanese style kind of cartoon. I mean, a bit kiddie, is it? I don't know. I mean, I guess like Mario's kiddie, I suppose. Anyway, so it's $4. Although I think the first one in Lost Winds series has gone free, so maybe worth checking that one out first. But yeah, very polished kind of platforming adventure, I guess. The best way to describe it. I mean, very involving the wind. You're kind of like summer and winter and seasons and all that kind of stuff. Yeah,
cool.
Quite a good range of stuff going on there.
There's some nice things.
If you like games, I suppose.
Well, yeah. You do have to like games. let's go to the what we've been playing fields.
What we've been playing.
Theme tune. Keith, is your one real? Is that actually what it's called?
Made up a game.
Yeah.
You're hating games so much that you just make them up.
Well, no, okay. So, Keith, your game is called MacGuffin's Curse, and I thought you were being clever, because a MacGuffin is like something that comes along to basically make something keep going, like within a story.
I'm not sure you've explained very well what MacGuffin is, but yeah.
Well, okay, I'll tell you what, readers, listeners even, go to Wikipedia, type in MacGuffin. Okay.
I'm going to have to do that now.
All right. Well, it's basically a plot device to keep...
Exactly. Well, I always thought MacGuffin was a bit like, you know, something that wasn't really real, that you just kind of... Oh, he's talking about a MacGuffin, kind of, yeah. Where these MacGuffins come from?
Well, it's kind of like, for Doctor Who... His MacGuffin is the sonic screwdriver, so whenever he's stuck, he goes, how can I get out of it? He goes, oh, the sonic screwdriver will fix it. So it's just like
that's true, yeah. A plot device in the form of, yeah.
So, MacGuffin's Curse?
It's a real game. I'm not at a stage where I'll just start making up games. There's so many apps, you'll never know.
I've met the developers. You better not be rude about it.
Have you? Not be rude about it.
Although I'm going to annoy them, because I can't remember if they're Australian or New Zealanders, and they both sides get very annoyed if you get that wrong, and I can't remember which either. I think they're Australian, but
yeah, that's certainly something. Yeah, it's interesting. It's an interesting, weird, in a way. So essentially, what it is like a viewed from the top down. You're in like a room. It's just a series of rooms, essentially, and you have to get out of them either by... And usually it's a case of pressing buttons in set order to open up other bits, so then you go and press the button in there, which opens up another bit. But the trick, the twist on it is that you can turn into a werewolf.
The MacGuffin is...
Yeah. Well, then, yeah, the MacGuffin is that he can become a werewolf. The very opening kind of portion of play, you nick this amulet that has this curse on it, that turns you into a werewolf. So on each level, there is a kind of a spot that has moonlight shining down to it, and you move into there, and you can either switch to being a werewolf or switch to being human. So the idea is that there are some things in your way that you need to be a werewolf to get past, like, I don't know, there's a big stone you can rip apart just because he's so strong. And then there's more delicate bits where you need to switch back to being a human again so you can open doors and do more human-y things. So it's just a series of get out of this room, essentially, by working out what you need to do first, what buttons you need to press first. And that is intermingled with a lot of, not plot in a kind of heavy way, but there is a lot of script that's quite amusing. And it has quite a... There's a slight Cloink and Pick. Point and Click.
They were two wrestlers, weren't they?
Cloink and Pick. Oh, God, I got Alzheimer's. Point and Click kind of device in that you can look at objects and they get descriptions and it puts some text at the bottom of the screen, which is often quite amusing. And the guy, you mean the various characters you interact with who you can offer you help or even just, I'm not sure how many, kind of what the credit system is, but you get it will solve some levels for you if you literally can't do it. But intermingled with that is a lot of plot and talking and quite amusing, almost kind of broken story kind of way, almost kind of taking the mickey out of the game kind of type dialogue, which is very welcome. And the art style is quite original. I wouldn't say it's necessarily attractive, but it certainly looks kind of like someone loves it.
It's quite kind of sketchy almost, isn't it?
Yeah, it has it, yeah. This isn't going to be, if it was a massive company, then they wouldn't make the game look like this, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. It looks, certainly has a look of its own. But the only problem I found is that after a few rooms, you kind of start thinking, well, yeah, I kind of get this now. And now it's just a case of, it's less a case of it being incredibly, you know, the levels don't really change. It's more a case of whether you can put up with them, just essentially more blockers in your way that you have to get through. And some of them really are. I mean, it becomes the case that they're not especially original. It literally kind of follows the same format. It just gets more and more complicated. And some of them, it gets so complicated that you can't work out which one you're meant to go to first. And you kind of just sit there looking at the screen for a while. And it's at that point, I think, that it depends how much the kind of plot and is amusing you as to whether you want to continue rather than any thrill you're getting from the play. So it's not awful. It's not amazing. It's very well presented and someone clearly loves it. And I think there's a lot of potential there. It's a kind of crossover. It's not quite a point and click, but it's kind of similar. And it works. I mean, I was playing it mainly on iPad. It works very well on iPad. It kind of looks better, I think, fits. That kind of iPad screen.
Originally, it won. It was a PC game, but like an indie. Quite a lot of indie awards. So it's ported over.
Perfectly unharmless. No, it's perfectly harmless. That's what I mean.
You're really scrunching your words up today.
Perfectly harmless, but I don't think you'd be rushing to say, "Oh, I must get back and keep playing it." It kind of suffers from a lack of originality, I'd say, as you continue playing. It's like a 6 or 7, essentially. It's not terrible.
Well, I'll go next because I haven't really got a lot to say about it.
Is it real?
It is real.
Each week now. Is it a real game?
And it's famous as well.
Yes.
Yeah. I've been playing Ninjump by Backflip Studios.
I've got a funny story about that, but you say first.
Okay, so it's an endless runner, except for you run up the screen, and you play a ninja, and you run up the side of buildings endlessly until you get hit by a bird, or a star, or a ninja, or dynamite, or I think that's about it. Is there something else? Probably something else. And you can flip between two walls. You're basically wall running, and you can pick up shields so that you get another life. And you just need to see how far you can run. It's an endless runner. The art style is really nice. And I think... And the one-button control is kind of cool. I really like that. But I think it kind of... It doesn't really do enough. It doesn't feel like there's as much depth to it as like a temple run. And there's certainly not as much nuance. And I don't know. I just don't feel particularly compelled by it. I'm not really 100% sure as to why it did quite so well.
Sounds very familiar to a lot. There were Java games like that back in the day, where it was just a case of switching sides as you run up or down a wall.
It's just a bit. I don't want to end on a downer, so please, John, tell me your funny story.
Well, no, I mean, I know Backflip guys pretty well, very well actually. But I mean, the reason they've done so well is that they have a lot of kind of free. They were one of the first people to just do kind of just their games were free. I mean, I think there is in-app purchase in there, where you can probably buy it for 99 cents without any ads and stuff. But basically, they have like a massive, so many games out there with ads in that they could just put banner ads and go, "We got a new game coming out," and they had so many millions of people playing their games. They go, "Oh, I like this game from Backflip. I'll, you know, have a go at this one." So that was kind of. I mean, they built up very quickly a portfolio of games that were quite quick to make, quite simple. They would update them fairly regularly, but they would just like pick up and play. There wasn't supposed to be any depth in it. The funny story I had about it was just before Ninja Jump came out, because it's a really stupid name, isn't it? Ninja Jump, because you're a ninja, it should be Ninja Jump. But unfortunately, or not unfortunately, but just about a month before that game came out, I was contacted by, I can't remember how old he was, he was something like 14 or 15 year old, this guy. I don't know how he got my details, but he was making a game called Ninja Jump.
That sounds very dodgy. I don't know
how. Yeah, I mean, don't know that. And he was really, he'd made like a few apps before. He'd made a Modern Warfare kind of walkthrough app or something, Modern Warfare sound, what do you call it, like a sound deck app or something. Or he'd made a few anyway. He'd made like a couple of hundred quid selling these apps. I mean, this was just a few years ago now. And he had this ninja jump game, and it was basically a clone of Doodle Jump. So it's like Doodle Jump, but you're a ninja. And he kept kind of saying, "Oh, you know, can you review this game?" And I was like, "It's not really, you know, I don't think we get a very good score." Because I think he was quite a good coder. His art was fairly, you know, rudimentary kind of thing. So it was kind of one of these things where almost when I came online, I'd just know I'd get like an email or a Skype from him going, "What do you think about this?" Or I was like, and it got to the end of the line where you can't really. You know, you can't really be polite anymore, you know, and just say, well, actually, we can't. I think I wrote a few things about it, because partly just because he was young, and I kind of thought it was an interesting story there. But in the end, I kind of thought, sorry, mate, we really can't review it. It's not, you know, we wouldn't get a good score. And then, like, 2 weeks later, this other big company came out with this game, Ninja Jump, and I kind of thought, oh, why did they not buy the name of him? But anyway, they clearly didn't. So I've not heard from him since. So I guess maybe I wasn't very polite after all that. Yeah.
Do you want to tell us what you've been playing?
I've not actually been playing anything. I have to admit, because I've been I was over last week in Orlando at the Blackberry show. So I've been working. I did play a bit. What did I play? I played a bit of. We didn't discuss it before. It just came out last week. So Glue bought out a game. Obviously, Glue are a freemium publisher. And they bought out a game which is kind of, going back to the Game Loft stuff, I don't know whether you'd call it necessarily a clone, certainly inspired by. So they've got a game called Little Kingdom, and it's basically a version of Tiny Tower, but instead of building up, you're building like dungeons down. But it's not a clone, as I said. It's kind of, I mean, obviously Tiny Tower was a game that did get kind of horribly cloned from Zynga and cloned from other people when other games were taken off the App Store because they were too close. Whereas this clearly isn't. This is inspired by, it's very good art style, but clearly the majority of the gameplay is from Tiny Tower. And it's quite nice, actually. I mean, I played Tiny Tower quite a lot, reviewed it, and this is, I don't think the kind of real hardcore Tiny Tower fans would play it, because they'd go, oh, this is a clone. But I think, you know, for people who haven't come across that game, you know, I think it's pretty nice. I mean, I think that kind of level, it's more about the art style. It's kind of nice little 3D characters and cute, and obviously it's fun to play around with the citizens and decide what they're going to do. And it's like a fantasy style, so they have little dragon eggs, and a lot of them are the dragons are the power up. So it's almost like the in-app purchases to like buy more is to get the dragon eggs quicker, because when you have these little cute dragons wandering around, they like fill up your floors. So basically you're building dungeons, but they're not really dungeons, they're kind of like retail things, and you know, things where people work, and then you level up as your floors become more efficient, and you get more efficient workers. So it's kind of, you know, resource based game.
Sounds lovely. Did you see Mickey Mouse?
No, I didn't actually go to the whatever it's called. It's kind of weird actually. That bit of I've never been to Disney World, but that bit of Orlando is quite a large bit of Orlando, and it's just the whole. It's like a 10-mile block. There's Disney World, which is like about six theme parks in one. There's Universal Studios theme park, which is massive. There's just about 50 hotels all around it, each of which has like a massive swimming pool. It's just unbelievable. So, but I didn't actually. No, I was working, as I said. Work.
But you could have seen Mickey Mouse.
No, not a fan.
James, tell us all about your game.
Well, I have been playing Glue games as well.
Hey.
But I've been playing mean Glue games. Oh, so mean. Deer Hunter Reloaded, which is the most recent of the whole Deer Hunter, you know, Hedgehog Hunter, Squid Hunter... Not really all of those, but they have a bunch of hunter games where the objective is to shoot cute, fluffy animals for laughs. And yes, every time you cackle.
They're not really cute, though, are they? I mean, it's not.
Oh, the deer are quite cute.
Deer are quite cute.
Yeah. But it's designed for these games. It is designed for American guys who like hunting. I mean, it's not like you're not shooting Bambi. You are shooting.
Well, they are.
It's not Bambi's mum. Okay.
All right.
Fact, that's even worse. You're right in the sense that obviously it's clearly aimed at a specific demographic, and they're very popular as well, from what I understand. In the States, they do really, really well. Yeah. And you know, obviously, if you're a gun-toting type who enjoys slaughtering the less intellectually gifted for larks. Then yes.
Why are you gonna shoot Keith?
No, that's an in-app purchase. You have to, you know, cough off. That's a lot of gold for that particular prize, that head on your wall. It looks on the upside, it looks very good. That's about it. On the downside, upside, it's well presented. Menus are looking good, and the actual creatures themselves and everything look nice. The forest is, you know, the environment is handled well and everything, which kind of makes it all the more troubling. Obviously, they're going for the thing with when you're dealing with this kind of like violence in video games as a broader thing. You either do it very, very like if you do it very, very seriously, you have to have a certain amount of either I don't know taste or class when you're doing it. Or video games tend to more commonly go the other way, where it's just like crazy cartoon wild nonsense. It's all very fun. People exploding in balls of green goo, and it's very detached from reality. You know,
what game's this? I want to play that.
Yeah. Well, you either kind of go one way or the other. I mean, the GTA stuff was more like Grand Theft Auto was more serious, but it still got that element of it being a bit daft, of people pinging off your bonnet when you run over them and stuff. So it's not really, oh, this is very, very serious. This goes the sim route, where they really are going, like, trying to make the animals as realistic as possible. Die in as realistic as possible a way, and even do a kind of bullet time when you take the shot, it goes all slow motion, so you zoom in and you can see it go bam into the neck and the thing goes and collapses. Exactly. It's not a very good sound effect. The deers tend to go, which is a bit weird. There's even an X-ray option where you can flick into X-ray mode for a period of time before it charges down, and so you can aim for vital organs. It highlights your liver and your heart and your kidney and your brain, so you can make sure you really, if you want to just like maul it and leave it like struggling on the floor, then you just go for the leg, and then you can so you know, it's really done so you can like perfect the art of animal cruelty. I mean, I'm not like some insanely like I eat meat and stuff. I'm not necessarily.
What?
Yeah, I know, outrageous, isn't it? I mean, I'm not completely anti the notion of yes, killing things for a purpose or killing things for food or stuff and stuff like that. There are issues. There are good arguments. Well, to be fair, there's quite a good arguments for not doing it. But I can sort of just about look myself in the mirror if you're doing it for reason. The idea of going out and just you know, despite being a carnivore, I do not just wander about the street with an M16 picking off random cats, you know, from the neighborhood for fun. The way that a lot of the computer games work is that you're either killing for a reason, you're either defending some mighty space race again, you know, from some alien invasion, or you're generally doing, if you're committing horrendous acts, you're generally doing it for a reason, or it's done in a very nice, surreal kind of way where it's just, you know, you're not really seriously doing anything. This is literally just, the animals are sitting there. The animals are grazing in the forest, minding their own business. And you're just taking aim on their head whilst they're munching their grass. And it's like, there's no threat here. It's not like you're being charged by, you know, a rhino and you have to defend yourself, in which case it's you or the rhino. The rhino's going down. They're just sitting there, just, you know, munching, you know, chewing the cud, and you have to blow its brains out. And it's, it's like 20 minutes in, I feel depressed. I want to cry. This is just mean.
Kind of to be fair, the British don't have a very strong tradition of hunting, whereas obviously the Americans and the Germans and the French, that's kind of a bit more of their kind of, you know, outdoorsman kind of culture. So
Well, we do a bit of fishing over here, but even then I feel a bit... I did go fishing once, you know, and when you catch the fish and it switches around on the line, you have to pull it out. I just felt kind of bad. I mean, granted, I mean, like that's a separate issue. I obviously am not the target audience for this, so that's fair enough. More intrinsic to the problem of it all is, A, you don't do any hunting. It's like a gallery shooter. They're all just standing there and you don't move or anything. There's no hunting. There's no looking for footprints and digging up clues and actually finding the creature. They're just sitting there and you just shoot them. That's not hunting. So fundamentally, there's a problem that you're not hunting deer. It's just deer maimer or deer shooter. It's the tool. So right there, there's a problem. And then there's obviously the feeling evil thing is another one. And the other thing, which goes back to what we were talking about earlier, is the freemium. And the way that this freemium is implemented is rough. They've got the energy bar system so that you're only allowed to play a certain amount of time per day, and then it locks you out, and then you have to come in the next day and play some more if you want to, unless you cough up the gold. And obviously it takes ages to earn the gold, and it runs out pretty quickly. And your price for you know, paying gold, you have to buy for anything you want to buy, any items or any weapons or anything like that, or energy. And that costs anywhere between from 99 cents to $99. So like $100. I don't know what the British one is, but yeah, a lot of money basically. If you want to carry on playing, and it's kind of like an endless, never-ending thing. You can't just unlock the game. You have to keep topping up and topping up and topping up as you're going along. And it runs out very quickly. And just, I assume, if you're into this sort of thing, I imagine, just as you're getting going and you're, you know, getting the blood thirst on, it knocks you out and you have to chuck up. And like I said before, if it was like, oh, do you like this game? Great. Here, give us 69p. Give us 2.99. Give us a five or a tenner. Whatever, just you give us a block sum and then we can carry on and forget about it from here on in. It's not, it's that constant kind of put a coin in the meter, put a coin in the meter. And it's just, even if you're enjoying the game, I imagine that's a more of a frustration. For me, it was like, I've run out of energy, that's a shame, put it down, forget about it and never go anywhere near again because it's mean. But if you're enjoying it, I imagine that's a real, like, you know, stick in your spokes. And just deeply cynical.
Well, that sounds horrendous. We'll end it there, I think. Make sure to head on over to Pocket Gamer for all the latest news, reviews, features and more. Make sure you're following us on twitter.com/pocketgamer, and if you grab a second, go and leave us a review and rating on the iTunes store. My name is Peter Willington and I've been joined by James Gilmore.
Hello, goodbye.
John Jordan.
Goodbye.
And Keith Andrew.
Goodbye. That was very professional, by the way. All that linking to the site. Will doesn't do that. So.
Thanks. good. I can press stop on the recording.